Lorna Wyckoff, thanks for coming in.
Happy to be here. Love to talk about Jim.
When did you meet Jim first?
Well, I met Jim in the late 80s. He had just come to town, he and Mary. I might get this detail wrong, and maybe Mary can fill us in, but he'd been selling advertising for some small papers in Georgia, I believe. Moved to Richmond because of Mary's job, and came to Style interested in selling ads for us. So we were on Franklin Street. We'd been in business maybe 7 or 8 years. We'd had some turnover, and in he came, the front door, and it started from there.
Right. And so paint a picture of Style at that time. What kind of an operation was it?
So Style in the late 80s, our sartorial choices sort of mimicked the U-Crop checkouts folks who wore blue Oxford cloth shirts and khaki pants. And it was the preppy 80s. And this is how everybody rolled in those days. There was really kind of one thread, and that was it.
Yeah, yeah.
And our ad reps looked the part, and we all encouraged dressing for success. I think there was even a book of that title.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we had a big, tall, handsome John Fleming in his navy blazer and his khaki pants. And in the door walked Jim Wark. We would later laugh that he was Joe Pesci walking in the courtroom and my cousin visiting, in his sort of slick seersuck pinstripe suit.
Yeah, yeah.
Gray and kind of dark and sort of in charge and striding into these offices and just looking around and thinking, oh, okay, this is different.
Yeah, yeah,
this
yeah.
is going to be different. And honestly, within about 30 seconds of conversation with Jim, we were instant friends. You know, just his big, wonderful hug of a guy
mm-hmm.
with a big grin and happy to see me. And our first reference was really about Massachusetts.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So I'd grown up there. He'd spent his formative high school years there. And he was from a town on the outskirts of the Berkshires. I think it was called Wilbraham. And my family had grandmother had a place in Lenox. And so it was sort of a arts community, and mm-hmm. there was Tanglewood, and there was music, but you know, Massachusetts, you know, we were parking the car, we were talking about the Kennedys,
yeah,
we shared a hero in Bill Russell. I don't know if that name means anything to your listeners, but we would probably call him the great Bill Russell, who was Boston Celtics career man,
greatest basketball player ever.
Thank you. I'm there with you. And also just on the forefront of civil rights and an activist.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim and I were activists. It might have come from our Massachusetts heritage, maybe, but we believed in fighting the good fight, and so we shared that. So that was the start of it. And he was instantly successful. People loved him and adored him. And off he went into the annals and history of ad sales, people who made a difference.
Talk about him as an ad salesman. Talk about his technique. Can you share any thoughts on how he could sell?
You know, I would say that he was determined in the nicest possible way. He knew when to quit. He knew when to say, we're done, this isn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a very, very sharp, pragmatic approach to it. He would come in and say, you know what, Lorna, this is not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. You can't send me out the door one more time to get this account. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, and usually he was right.
He was always right. Yeah.
talk a little bit about how he fit in with that Richmond way, as you described. Was it an easy fit? Did it take some time? Or did he instantly win people over?
You know, I'm so sorry that I cannot remember the line of business, but when you came, you inherited, a chunk of advertising. And usually we would start off by making sure people had a solid foundation. And so they were regulars.
Mm-hmm.
And he would then maintain that account and then go looking for a certain percentage of new accounts.
Right.
Everybody loved him.
Yeah.
He just fit in easily just because of his warmth. Just that, as everybody's been saying, you know, just that big bear hug of a guy
mm-hmm.
who just instantly won you over. He looked you right in the eyes. He was charming and funny and, friendly, just friendly to everybody. So that was a great chapter. I brought Jim into a place that I think you know very well, which right. was 64 Magazine.
And that's where I got to meet him and know him first, is at 64.
And so that would be 10 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought him back then to manage our advertising group.
Yeah.
And you were there doing music and reporting and all manner of reporting on cultural things. And, you know, at that point, after 10 years, I think what developed between us, apart from work, was real love of music, which I'm, oddly for my age and stage, is one of the few people who sort of kept up with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And kept up with it, as you know, locally and in the state and stuff. So we loved it. We loved talking about this band player, this person, that person.
When did you first become aware of Jim's own formidable musical talent?
That would have been at Style, and that would have been when he was going to play a gig. And we went out to see him, and because, of course, we would support anything our people were doing, and went out to see him with no expectation. And, of course, we're just gobsmacked at this guy who not just was a good guitar player, but was deeply lost in the music in the way that you see Gary Clark Jr. deeply lost in that moment, or, you know, Neil Young rambling on stage and just in that headspace of music.
Yeah.
That's what I saw in Jim that just blew me away.
I was always impressed by his depth of knowledge. He was into all kinds of stuff. At the folk festival, he wanted polka. but then he would turn around and play you know, be in a bubblegum band.
Yeah.
Was that reflective of his personality, a sort of wide-ranging personality?
You know, I wish I knew more about his musical roots. I don't. I know that we all love that music in the 70s and 80s and the sort of blues background and John Mayall. And I remember laughingly crying, telling him about a long story about being so underage and over my head in an Iron Butterfly concert in Harvard Square. And I mean, we all abroad, but there was also Paul Butterfield Blues Band that we listened to. We were kids, we were young, but that was sort of the giants of our local Cambridge scene. So we went way back on certain musical aspects in our lives.
What do you think we will miss with Jim's passing? What do you think Richmond?
Oh, gosh.
We know the effect he had on his friends, but the Richmond region, he had his hand in so many pies.
You know, Don, for me, he was like a back door I could always go to. I knew the minute I saw him across a room that there would just be smiles and laughter and warmth and affection and... And, you know, that's rare, the depth of that sort of thing happening. I mean, you know, sometimes I see people and I think they don't know who I, you know, I don't recognize them. They don't recognize me. You know, the gray hair barrier of like, I think I knew you.
Right.
But Jim, you just couldn't wait to get up and see him. And I had the pleasure, like you, to work, you know, in and out of the folk festival for many years with a longtime supporter from passing the bucket at the very first show with, you know, the Lucky family.
Yeah.
And there you were. There was Jim. There was Tim Timberlake. Mm-hmm. There was Carlos. There was just so many people who were sort of grassroots Richmond music community. And I was so happy when I could go in and out of that world.
I'll have to ask them, but I always suspected that the Folk Festival Committee, very integral part of the success of the Folk Festival, was as diverse as it was because Jim made sure it was. He made sure that I'm not sure how I got on the committee, if not for Jim's, patronage.
Oh, yes.
And I'm not the only one.
Yes.
So speak to that, the importance of having someone like that, who's a good collaborator and can recognize the strengths and the talents of others. That's a rare gift.
Yeah, you just made me think about that aspect of him that I hadn't really thought of. But that it was, you know, there's a lot of people who will see things, just not pick up the phone and not do it. But if he saw you, and I can completely understand that he would be your biggest advocate and supporter and pick up the phone and say, hey, I was thinking about you. Do you want to come over and do
this? And not just me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
A lot of people.
And he did that with Randy, my husband and I, on Virginia Voice. and called us up and said, I'm here now. I know you want to know about it. I know you all work at NPOs, and I'm here now. And just, you know, I'm not calling you for money. I'm just calling you to let you know what I'm doing. And we came, visited, and so pleased. I mean, it was just, it was great.
How can we best honor Jim?
Well, this sure is an honor, and I'm honored to be here and speak about my friend. Mm-hmm. It means a lot. I think that's one great way.
How about the rest of us? Yeah, there's been some talk about naming a local music award after him.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, because that was something that he had talked about for many years.
I love that.
Call it the Wark.
The Wark. Yeah, and I don't know. You all are in the middle of all this. It'd be certainly a fun addition to something like the Folk Festival or something on a great radio station. There are lots of ways to do it, but count me in. Mm-hmm. All in.
Any other thoughts?
I miss him. I miss my friend. Again, I think we all just feeling that sort of stunned sense of loss and damn.
It's weird that you don't know what you have until it's gone.
You don't know what you have until it's gone.
Thanks, Lorna.
Thanks, Don. Honored to be here.